You just heard Spook Houses with Bad Sound. For more information on the band, make sure to find them on their website, facebook.com/spookhouses. Coming up later in the program, we are going to be speaking with Chris Crofton, a really cool comedian that I'm hoping that you really like, because I like him. So I'm not saying you should too, because everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but I'm going to be talking with him, and we're going to be exploring the gamut of his comedy. But before we do that, how about we do this? A while ago, I was invited to this concert series out in Woodland Hills, out in the San Fernando Valley. I got to see this really cool band. They were called Stellar Sons and Daughters. Get this, they opened up for Jefferson Airplane, which, by the way, killed it, but that's besides the point. the opening band was Stellar Sons and Daughters, and they completely killed it. And luckily enough, I got in touch with them, and I'm now getting to play a song by them. So here's Concord by Stellar Sons and Daughters. For more information on this band, make sure to email them, stellarsonsanddaughters.com.
Thank you. shame. Maybe it's the hate. You don't love me, no. So I'm down, down on you, down on, down on my knees, down on you, down on, down on, down on, down on my knees, down on, down on, down on, down on, down on my knees, down on, down on, down on, down on, down on my knees, down on. And I'm begging you.
Statue of Liberty. Do you remember when the Statue of Liberty had that fucking part where you could pay an extra $2 and tour her actually anatomically correct full-size vagina? And now they wall that shit off because they don't want, I don't know what, they don't want to know that women have vaginas, or obviously the Statue of Liberty is a woman, so she's going to have a vagina. And now these kids, now these women are growing up without knowledge of how the world works down there because they walled off the Epcot vagina.
Yeah, you're gonna have to come by and check out one of my shows if you're ever in LA.
Yeah, definitely. I might be moving to LA, and actually, I'm fairly certainly moving to LA in the springtime, or maybe probably springtime. I want to do stand up. Like, I mean, I don't know. I've been in Nashville forever, and I love it here, and I'm very popular here, but there's just sort of a limit to what you can do here. I checked out your thing. It's kind of like you do a lot of things, like music and comedy, or I don't know what. maybe you can. How do you want this to go? Like, what did you want to ask me about? Did you want to ask me about the comedy record or Harmony Korine or what?
I have questions about. About everything, so like it's gonna be a short but comprehensive interview.
Okay, cool.
So don't worry, I know what I'm doing.
I'm sure you do. You have a very nice website.
Oh, thank you. And maybe a lot of people don't get this, but it's entertheshell.com, and then I'm Turtle, and then like people don't put two and two together until like 30 minutes in the interview, where they're like, oh, Shell, Turtle, okay, I get it.
Right, no, I figured it out. When I saw your name on the thing, I mean, I thought that your name was Turtle, and then I understood the...
You got it.
Out too. Of the shell. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I do a lot, like, just, you know, in brief, like, I first started focusing on music, but the more I focused on music, the more all these comedy people would just come to me and be like, hey, you know, like... We really like the music, you know, and then I'd just be like, hey, why don't you come on? And then, you know, I started expanding my catalog of the various types of people that I would interview, from musicians to now comedians. I've interviewed like John Lajoie. I'm interviewing another comedian today for my other show that I do, my live show, which I film and tape. And that's Guadalajara Joe. He's more of a comedy singer. I know you do comedy music as well with your troupe.
I do all sorts. I do real music. I do fucking funny music. I do the stand up. I do a podcast of my own.
Right.
I do I used to have a radio show, which was what turned into the podcast. I used to have a really popular radio show here in town, like on the Vanderbilt station, and they had to they sold their frequency to public radio, and so we turned it into a podcast. And
you mean you weren't fit for NPR?
Oh yeah, we weren't fit for NPR. Although we had to do the show clean, because we were on the air, and I actually kind of liked the kind of limit. I mean, it was kind of cool to have to kind of be pretty like weird and not be able to say fuck,
Well, I mean, I think that's always the best for creativity is setting limitations for yourself, because within those limitations, that's when the creative juices begin to flow,
Yeah, we were. Oh man, I missed that show a lot. That was a lot of fun. I mean, even having limitations, having just random people driving through Nashville and listening to that show. We basically did soft rock and like talked. It was me and my brother, and we just talked about politics. And I did characters and all kinds of weird shit. And that people just drive through in trucks and stuff and call up and say, "What the hell is this?"
Right.
I miss that. Just sort of like people always calling up and being like, "What is this?"
well, here's the thing. But here's the thing, though. Like, you can set those limitations on yourself. Like, just because you're no longer on the air, that doesn't mean you do have the freedom now to curse and do other things. But at the same time, you could still set limitations on yourself to breathe that creative freedom once again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's taken a while for us to kind of grow into the podcast, because for me it's a different kind of, it's just different. We just celebrated our 100th episode, and I think we really have it kind of worked out now. But it took a while. It took a while to get sort of just comfortable with that kind of, ultimately I would love to be able to take phone calls, but I'm pretty technically inept, I wish we had streaming and we could take phone calls. That would be great, but we don't right now. So it's without the phone calls, it's just you sort of the whole kind of feeling of broadcasting to nobody. It's kind of a weird feeling at first.
Right.
But I got used to, it took a while to get used to it, but now I'm used to it and I like it.
Yeah.
And because you're essentially talking to yourself a lot of the time, which is pretty interesting.
Well, to me, I think that is going to help you, because when you're on stage, granted, you are, looking at the people, but at the same time, you're talking to yourself in your head, because all that material that's in your head. So if anything, it's only going to help you.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I mean, I do most of my best stuff, on the fly, under pressure. The podcast is deranged. I mean, it's just it's all stream of consciousness stuff. I mean, we don't write anything, and we have this premise that we operate out of this big skyscraper, the Chris Crofton building, and it's all nonsense. I talk about all the features we have in the Chris Crofton building, like endless lap pools and weight rooms, and I mean it's completely made up on the spot, and I think people really appreciate it. They can kind of sense that it's made up, and I really like that kind of thing. Like, I really like the when people know you're thinking while you're doing it, like figuring it out as you're doing it. I like it. It gives it a daredevil kind of aspect.
On the phone with me is Chris Crofton, which you can find on his website, thechriscroftonshow.com. And I got you here, and we kind of just went into the interview and stuff like that. But the reason why you're here is because we're talking a little bit about comedy and kind of just how you are, and as well as your debut album, which is Pearls Before Swine, live at the Springwater, which is available now. And, as we are talking about all the kind of different things you do, it's pretty remarkable to me that you've only recently released a debut album. What was the, as far as for stand-up, tell me about that process and that decision.
Well, when I got out of school, I went to college, my dad had some money at the time, and he said he would pay for my college, and I went to college, but I just because he said he would pay for it, but I hadn't really thought about what I wanted to do or anything, and I kind of went to college and drank beer and wasted my time, and I got out of college and realized I had no skills, and the only thing anyone had ever told me in my life was that I should be a stand-up comedian. People always said, you're so funny, you should be a stand-up comedian, and I had always been embarrassed by that because I didn't like to admit I was funny. I felt like somehow that was, like, lacking. So I didn't like the idea of saying I was a comedian. Like, I felt like that made me obnoxious, just the statement. Like, I'm a comedian kind of ruined the, I don't know, I felt like bragging or something. But then I realized I had no choice because I had no idea what the fuck I was going to do. So I said to my friends, I said, listen, I'm going to maybe try and do some stand-up. And if I say something funny while we're hanging out, I might run away and write it on a napkin. And I was really embarrassed by that. Like, I was like, I know it's lame as anything to do that. And they were like, no, what are you talking about? Like, you know, they were like concerned for me having a way to make a living. They were like, go ahead and do whatever you gotta do. You know, if you gotta run away and write some shit on a napkin. You know, we always thought you should be a stand-up comedian. So I started doing stand-up in New York in the early 90s, but then I started writing songs, and that, I always wanted to be I was kind of learning how to play guitar as I was doing stand-up, and I started writing songs, and very quickly after I wrote these 12 or 13 acoustic songs, this little label offered to put them out, and as far as I was concerned, I was going to be, and that first record was called The Alcohol Man, and it came out on a label, which the label folded, and I moved to Nashville from New York to keep pursuing music, and I didn't move to Nashville because I moved to Nashville because it was affordable and nice, not because I wanted to make country music. Not that I have anything I like. I mean, I grew up listening to 70s country music. My dad was really into that, especially the women. My dad really liked the hot 70s country singing women. But I didn't return to stand-up until I was in our band was very, very popular here in Nashville. It's called Crofton and the Alcohol Stunt Band. And Nashville found out I used to do comedy. And so I said, he said, do you want to just come down to an open mic and just do some stand-up for fun? And all those years of performing with the band, all the time, I used to talk between songs. I would get drunk and just make jokes between songs, just talk about just bullshit, you know, but it added up to so much stage time. Like, it added up to hours and hours and hours of stand-up, like, stage time, because I had played shows for, you know, I think I returned to doing stand-up in 2006, and I had done shows since 1997, at least one a month, sometimes two a month, you know, I don't know how many that is, but it's a lot, and you know, half of those shows was me talking between songs, so when I returned to stand-up, I was really good at it. All of a sudden. Because when I started in the early 90s doing stand-up, all I talked about was my ex-girlfriend. Because that was all I knew about.
But then you went out and you ventured in the world, and then you started just kind of grooming that act.
Yeah, well, I had a different, you know, I had a worldview. Like, my heroes stand-up are like Lenny Bruce and Richard Pryor and Steve Martin and Bill Hicks and Louis C.K. as far as modern guys, and I like people who mix the silly with the biting, more, you know, like, I like stand-up that's funny. I like Steve Martin because he was silly, but I like to be silly and I like to have an edge. Like, I'll do a joke like, you know, at least in Nashville right now, everyone's crazy about artisan food and food trucks and, you know, canning your own vegetables and pickling your own vegetables and brewing your own beer and all this shit. And we got all these wars going on, and we got drones just being made legal to fly over the United States of America. And so I do a joke like, you know, I don't think composting is the best way to stop the war. which makes people kind of uncomfortable because, you know, we do have these wars going on. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do to stop them. But I do feel like getting really obsessive about fancy food is a funny way to respond to them. But when I first did stand-up coming out of college, it was just all about, I didn't know anything. I mean, I just admitted to you, all I did was drink in college. So, I mean, I had the concerns of a suburban white kid. You know, I was, like, worried, you know, I was mad at my ex-girlfriend, that was about it. And I was immature, basically.
Tell me about this ideology and you actually taking that out on the road and actually saying that. Is it always a very different reaction every time, or do you get the same reaction from the crowd?
People don't like it. They tend to want to hear dirty jokes. That's all they kind of want to hear, comfort humor. Like, they want to hear, at least, I can only speak for the Southeast. I don't know. You know, I think that there are probably... One interesting thing was I did that making fun of people not keeping their eye on the ball, like, getting really into sort of selfish pursuits at a time when, civil liberties are under attack, and people don't like to hear about that. But here's what's funny about it. I was opening for the Bill Hicks documentary. They decided to have stand-ups open for the Bill Hicks documentary here in town at the Belcourt Theater, which is a great theater here, like a great independent theater. And they invited me to come down and do stand-up before the Bill Hicks documentary. So the Bill Hicks documentary had the audience you would imagine, like a bunch of liberals, like Hicks. But I started doing that, I don't think composting is the best way to stop the war stuff. And like the stuff like where, the dad and his son in an internment camp, and the son says to his dad, what were you doing while they were taking away our civil liberties? You know, I was in mustache contests. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't like it at all. They looked right at me and they didn't laugh, and they took it like I was insulting them, but they were okay with Bill Hicks saying that sort of stuff to them, I guess, 20 years later, because they felt like it didn't apply. But you know how, when you look at old performances of Bill Hicks, I mean, I guess I'm assuming you know who Bill Hicks is.
I don't know who Bill Hicks is.
Really? Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Bill Hicks is just this, he was this really political and really dirty and really just punk rock all around comedian from the early 90s. He died of pancreatic cancer in 1993. And he just was the perfect combination of political and entertaining. You know, because you can't get up there and preach. You know, you can't get up there and say you're all a bunch of rotten people, because I don't know the first thing about how to stop a war. You know what I mean? I have to be fair to my audience. Like, I can't be holier than thou. I participate in this shit too, you know. I mean, I'll admit that the way I live my life is not stopping the war in Afghanistan. So I'm not trying to insult them, but I do think that Bill Hicks, what I liked about him was he was able to point that kind of stuff out, and still, you know, he was self-deprecating. He knew on stage if he dug himself a hole doing political stuff that it was time to do something to lighten it. And I do that too. You know, I've got plenty of stuff that's just mindless. Right. The sex bases. When I grew up, first base was kissing, second base was up the shirt, third base was fingering, and the home run was fucking. Now, first base is fucking, second base is something called the bat wing, third base is exhuming a body, and the home run is shitting on a girl out of a helicopter.
You need to play this game immediately, because I would love to get to first base all the time.
Right. Well, that's, you just have to be, all you have to be is, you have to be 17 again. How old are you?
I am 33.
Yeah, see, I'm 43, so it's like we missed the boat. Like, back, you know, back then, everybody, you know, a blowjob was really wild when I grew up.
Oh, yeah.
Now blowjobs are handshakes, apparently. You know? We really got screwed on that one. Or at least I really did. I mean, for God's sake, when I grew up, you had to. I mean, the only way I could get pornography was to find a magazine, a waterlogged magazine, on the side of the road. And now you can watch.
I don't know if that magazine was. Magazine was waterlogged. You know, it just might have been.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't. You know, you're right. It could have been. It could have been jizz logged. Yeah. But yeah, see, I mean, I have no problem I like to mix up being, and that's what I love about Steve Martin, is that he was very silly, but he was all clearly very smart.
What I liked about Steve Martin was he has this amazing saying, which is, be so good that they can't say no. And I love that about it.
I also think that I learned from Lenny Bruce just that he would take his time on stage. A lot of it's not making the audience feel nervous, but that, you know, if the audience feels like if they don't laugh, you're going to crumple in deep and start crying, then they tend to tense up and they worry. For you, you've got to, like, convey that you are happy up on stage, and then people relax and they really are more forgiving. And Lenny Bruce would go on for 10 minutes sometimes without a punchline. But he just looked so cool on stage, and he, you know, just made it clear that he was in control, you know? And I guess that's a way of saying, be so good that they can't. I mean, in a way, like, you know, it's like, you know, when you're in, if a performer takes control of the stage, then the audience feels comfortable. And I try to do that. I try to, even if I am sweating on the inside, I try never to let them see it, you know? Because then they feel like, because the worst is when you go to see a comedian and they suck and you feel like they're going to die, like, on stage, you know, and it makes the audience want to just run. Like, I don't like to see bad comedy because it just makes me feel so bad for the people who are doing it. So it's like, I'd rather see, at least a rock band, you know, you figure they, I don't know, there's a lot of different ways that you can say a rock band. One guy might think a rock band sucks, and someone else might be able to find something good about him. But a comedian, it's pretty much either they're funny or they're not funny. It's not hard to figure out. But the record took so long to put out because I just hadn't taken comedy seriously, and I was really taking the music more seriously. And I still take the music seriously. We have a record coming out soon, Chris Crofton and the Alcohol Stunt Band. It's hard to say sometimes. But the Pearls Before Swine live at the Springwater came about because Mike from Chicken Ranch Records, which is where you can get the vinyl, you can order it directly from Mike. And when you get the vinyl for Pearls Before Swine live at the Springwater, there's a download on the inside. You go to Bandcamp and you put in the code, and then you get a whole other set of live comedy, which is all dirty stuff called Slime Before Swine, and I also do a director's commentary on my own stand-ups.
I actually got to listen a little bit to that swine commentary because I thank you, by the way. I got a free download of your actual performance and as well as all those small little other amenities that were offered, which made out to be like 2.5 hours of just sheer comedy of you that I got to just fill one day while I was, you know, preparing for the interview for you. So
awesome.
Thank you for that. And a few
things. No problem, Turtle. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, man. It was totally a pleasure. And what's crazy, too, is when I was approached, you know, to have you on, people were like, well, Turtle, you have a lot of bands on. Are you sure you want to go with this? And I was like, yeah, this guy's really funny. I like what he's doing. And I like these concepts of first of all, Chicken Ranch Records, which I'm a huge fan of. And I've had a few of their artists on. So once I found out that your LP was through them, that was the biggest compliment, I think, for you. Because it's a rarity that a record label picks up, at least to my knowledge, a comedian, you know?
Mike found out about me. Mike's a great guy, Mike Dickinson. He runs that label, and he's a great guy, and he just, I had a reputation for being very, very funny. I had been out to L.A. I opened for Neil Hamburger, and he was nice enough to help me get a show out in L.A. a few years ago, where I ended at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, and I opened for Bob Odenkirk and Louis C.K., and that was So Mike heard about these things and said, I want to put out a comedy record, and I want to put out your comedy record. And I said, do you want to hear some of my stuff? And he said, no. He said, you just have a good enough reputation. You just, you know, you just do it and give it to me, and I'll put it out. So hopefully it'll be the beginning of a good relationship or a long relationship. And I've got a Turbo Fruits is a band from here in Nashville. They were recently signed to Kings of Leon's label, and their guitar player has a little label of his own called Turbo Time, and I am putting out a split single of one side Chris Crofton and the Alcohol Stunt Band songs and one side comedy on a 45 coming up this fall.
That's cool. If I can just, you know, interject real quick, maybe throw in a few ideas, because I do like comedy albums kind of like Adam Sandler, where it's a bit and then there's a song, you know, in between.
Yeah.
Have you thought about doing something like that?
I love music so much. I kind of can't stand song parody type stuff, because it makes it like I feel like I'm like violating some sacred law. Like, I just feel like mixing music and comedy has to be really careful, because I don't like it to be 100% wacky. But there's a song on the Pearls Before Swine record, traditional blues song, which is a song I wrote called a traditional blues song, but the first line of the song is my cock is a wrecking ball and your mom's an old building.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess that's the idea for this split single, and I'm stealing the idea from Steve Martin. He did a record. The last stand-up record Steve Martin put out was one, it was a vinyl record, one half. It was called the Steve Martin Brothers. One side was him playing all banjo, and the other side was stand-up, and that's what I'm doing. This, it's going to be called the Chris Crofton Brothers, and I'm copying the art and everything from Steve Martin's record.
Well, all you have to do is just call it an homage, and you're fine, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what it is. I mean, it's you know, it's also, it's not a really, it's probably his least known comedy record. It was his last one he did, and it's a hilarious comedy record, and it's badass banjo playing, too, if anyone wants to. You can find it at a used vinyl place for probably $3.
Oh, perfect. I'll go over here in L.A. We have Amoeba Records, which...
Oh, I've been there. I've been to the... I love it.
Yeah, so I'm just going to probably go there and check it out. But
it's beautiful. It's called the Steve Martin Brothers. It's called, yeah, the Steve Martin Brothers.
Yeah, but, you know, thank you, by the way, for coming on the show. And my guest has been Chris Crofton, who, by the way, you can find on his website, thechriscroftonshow.com.
Oh, yeah, let me plug real quickly the Chris Crofton Show. The Chris Crofton Show podcast, we just did our 100th episode. It's hilarious, and it is on iTunes, the Chris Crofton Show. It's free. You can get the record on through Chicken Ranch Records, or you can get it from Amazon.
Do you have
I suggest getting it through Chicken Ranch, because you get all the bonus stuff. If you get it from Amazon, you just get the download of the album. But if you get the vinyl, you get the bonus stuff.
Okay, and I'll have a link for that, so that on the show notes, so that people can just click there and then pick up the record. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I was going to play some clips. The first clip that I played for everybody was the Statue of Liberty's vagina, because I think that was pretty hilarious.
I like that one.
And we're going to leave now with two clips. The next clip that we're going to listen to is Nobody Cares How You Cure a Cold, because it's so true. I heard that. And, you know, like... I was like, yeah, everybody comes up to me, and even I have my, like, thing, which is just drink tons of orange juice and you'll be fine. You know, that's
right.
You know, no one's going to listen to me either. But
here's the best part of that clip, just real quick, sorry, Turtle, but the best part of that clip is, and I left it on there because it's not the best delivery. It's not the best delivery I've ever had for that joke, but there's a pause. And you remember, there's a heckler that features prominently all through this record.
Oh, yeah.
And that man, I say, nobody cares how you cure a cold, and the whole time you're talking and telling him your secret recipe, they're just wishing you'd shut the fuck up. And then there's this big pause, and you just hear that guy go, why? That's my favorite part.
Real quick, Ben, okay, so... how did you record this show? Because it seemed very raw, and it seemed nobody knew that you were recording it, as because
no.
I hear people walking. I hear some orders of like some food. It's kind of a loud
yeah.
place, and a lot of comedy records that are done are very. I'm not saying yours wasn't professionally done, but it's you know when the person's talking, you can really hear the person, and it's kind of low in the ambiance. Whereas yours is kind of high on the ambiance with you talking,
yeah.
which made it for a very surreal. You know, I
thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was different. I thought it would mean, because if you listen to the record more than once, I mean, I feel like a lot of times people listen to a comedy record and they throw it in the corner and never listen to it again. And I really thought that this way, you can actually catch, sometimes you can't catch everything I say and you have to listen to it again. And it has kind of a bootleg kind of quality. And I recorded it with a portable digital player that I had sitting on top of the vending machine in the back of this bar, Springwater. If anyone's familiar with Nashville, it's just the best dive bar in town, and it's, in my opinion, one of the best dive bars in the country. If you ever come to Nashville, hit me up, and we can go to Springwater. It's a lot of fun.
Deal.
And it wasn't intended to be the record at all. I just thought it had a great quality to it. I mean, I just thought it had something unique to it, rather than just a sort of airless recording of me just doing, you know, jokes. I liked the idea of it being sort of an artifact.
Well, it came out fantastic, and it came out well. And you know, for more information, make sure to visit Chris on his website, thechriscroftonshow.com, and as well as Chicken Ranch Records, which I will have the link so that people can go and buy your album. And by the way, chickenranchrecords.com, that's where you can go and go ahead and look for Chris Crofton and his Pearls Before Swine live at the Springwater. And we've been talking about this all day, and that's been the music that you perform with the Alcohol Stump Band. And can I leave with the traditional blues song? Would that be cool?
Please do. Yeah, I love that song.
Okay, cool. It's a good song. What was it? My dick is like a aircraft carrier?
My cock is the wrecking ball. I was walking around my apartment one day, and the phrase in its entirety came into my head. My cock is a wrecking ball, and your mom's an old building. And I figured that's the kind of thing you should write down if it comes into your head, because it doesn't happen every day.
That's definitely something that you tell your kids, you know?
Turtle, if you need anything from me, email me at bestofbread@gmail.com, and same for anybody who, if anyone wants any of the band records, I can help you out with that.
Cool, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show and being a guest. Really appreciate it.
All right, take it easy, man.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
In case you were wondering, nobody cares about how you cure your cold. Hey, when someone has a cold and you're like, here's what you should do. You should take some chicken broth and put some tarragon in it. Nobody gives a fuck, and they're just pretending to care. They think the whole time you're telling them that is stop doing that. So next time someone says they have a cold, just be like, oh, who cares? Don't be like, my grandmother used to put a chicken foot in a fuck. Nobody gives a fuck. The whole time you're talking, everybody's mad.
Why? the moon crater. She's deep. Am I? Shovel in her bottle. Take some samples. Tell the whole goddamn world about it later.
Yeah!
Hey, what's up? It's Turtle with Enter the Shell. And if you know a band or are in a band and want to be featured on Enter the Shell, email me personally, turtle@entertheshell.com. And since you're already there, you might as well log on to Enter the Shell and download our cornucopia of podcasts and check out the blogs as well. You know, just something to keep you occupied from your daily life.